When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, scrolling, scrolling and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease our please, appease you, please don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok brought to you by Rolling Stone. So if you need any more proof that time is a flat circle in this day and age, we have a little bit of a blast from the past for you, which is the official return of Couch Guy.
Dun, dun.
Couch Guy, if you don't remember, although it was like a month ago, so if you listen to this podcast, then you almost certainly remember. He is a guy named Robbie. His full name is Robert McCoy. He's a college student, and he was dating this girl named Lauren. And Lauren made a very cute, kind of cringe video surprising her boyfriend in college. And immediately, it gets torn to shreds by the armchair detectives of TikTok. By the way, that's a couch pun. I don't know if you caught that for me, but I was very proud of myself.
I appreciated it.
When I wrote, because, you know, couches have arms.
Yes.
And a couch is technically a chair.
Yeah. And they're saying on their couches, detective-ing.
Yeah, exactly. So it works on multiple. I was really proud of myself. Of TikTok. And they're trying to figure out whether or not he's cheating, you know, by his reaction, by the body language, by the presence of other women in the video. There's, you know, people who think they see a phone, and one of the women sitting next to him on the couch is passing him the phone. And they're like, why did the woman have the phone? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the Couch Guy hashtag has more than 1 billion views, billion with a B. That's how much this blew up. And at the time, Couch Guy didn't really explicitly speak out about it. His girlfriend made some videos.
Yeah. She made some videos with him, or they did like dances and kind of tried to show that they were a couple and close.
Yeah. I thought that they handled it pretty well.
Yeah.
That, you know, basically shooting down haters, saying that they're fine and trying to laugh it off. You know, they handled it as best they could.
Yeah.
But it kind of just inflamed people.
His friend also participated. Like, his friend hopped on TikTok too, like one of the guys that was in the video, to like support them. But yeah, I think that also, again, like you said, everyone sort of started to read into all of that other stuff too, and like, you know, be like, okay, like, what do those videos mean?
Yeah, and he specifically got a lot of the harassment. I mean, she did too. A lot of people were like calling her stupid and, you know, like fooling herself. But he specifically probably got the most of it because people were accusing him of like gaslighting her.
Yeah.
Which was kind of, I mean, you can say that about, like, people on social media tend to say that about like basically anybody who says something that they disagree with.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're gaslighting me. And it's kind of just like a, you know, a boilerplate reaction. For people on the internet. And there was really no good way for him to win. But I think this essay that he wrote for Slate, I mean, what was really interesting about this phenomenon, to me, at least at the time that it was going on, and we talked about this during the Couch Guy episode, was how it really sort of crystallized just how easy it is for, you know, private citizens to go viral for doing nothing. Like not for, you know, participating in some sort of attention-getting stunt.
Yeah.
Or, you know, doing something, you know, really notorious. Literally all this guy did was sit on a couch and give his girlfriend a hug when she came to surprise him.
Yeah.
And it invited all this scrutiny that he just did not ask for. And this is what he writes about in the essay. While the Couch Guy meme was lighthearted on its surface, it turned menacing as TikTok users obsessively invaded the lives of Lauren, our friends, and me. People with no previous desire for internet fame, let alone infamy. Would-be sleuths conducted what Trevor Noah jokingly called the most intense forensic investigation since the Kennedy assassination. And he also took particular umbrage. He specifically calls out this Women's Health, or I think it's Women's Health article, where, that dissected his body language in the video, which I thought was funny because we did exactly the same thing on the podcast.
But like our body language expert was like very like pro this couple. Like she didn't have any sort of critique of his particular body language. She was more critiquing his friend's body language.
Yeah. God bless Tracy, because Tracy was like really, really chill about it. We need to get
our queen Tracy. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually the best person I've ever met.
Yeah. But
anyway, it's a good piece and everyone should read it. And he talks about something that we've discussed quite a bit on here, which is TikTok kind of turning armchair sleuthing into a competitive sport and what impact it has on the lives of private citizens who are not celebrities. You know, they didn't sign up for this. Like, you could argue that, you know, by virtue of being on the app and making this video, his girlfriend, you know, was, you know, opened herself up to this. But honestly, like, I don't know. I mean, there are billions of people on the app.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a specious argument.
And I mean, the way that TikTok works is like it creates this spider web, right? Like, it's so easy to, like, it's built in when you watch a video where you can immediately duet it or like stitch the video with a new video or like, you know, creating replies to comments, even, you know, you can like build this web of things that are a new universe around a certain video. And that's just the way a lot of content is spread. Like, you know, you see one video that's viral and then the next day you're seeing a video that's like making fun of that viral video or like responding to it or reacting to it. And that's just the way that TikTok functions. And so, like you said, like the way that people who are private citizens can post something that's very innocuous, very simple, very, you know, just a quick reunion video can suddenly just like spin out of control because the way that the app functions is that you're supposed to be responding and kind of creating more content that's either mimicking or in conversation with the original content.
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot of, and he mentions this in his piece, Sabrina Prater, who is this trans woman who went viral sort of very accidentally on the app. She's sort of dancing in like this dilapidated house and her appearance is a little eccentric. And at first people were just kind of like making fun of her background and like her physical background and like the way she and it was definitely like not nice, but it wasn't like what it would turn into, which was people speculating that she was a serial killer based on, you know, stains on the floor, like water stains they were saying were blood stains, or like she had a computer monitor behind her with faces on it, and she said, and people were saying, oh, it's, you know, her victims in the basement. It was really awful, really classist, really transphobic. It spun out of control. She was really upset. She got doxxed. And it just, it seems to me like there's something about TikTok that's sort of, you know, it that has this kind of bullying kind of built into it in a way, because of what you were saying earlier, that you're so encouraged to engage with this content that, you know, is going viral and not necessarily for good reasons, like not necessarily for positive, like, oh, let's support people reasons, but, you know, because people are piling on and making people's lives miserable. Yeah. And I think TikTok really has to reckon with that.
Yeah, it's the true crimification of the internet generally. Like, I feel like there is, like, everyone suddenly thinks that they have the tools to, and I mean, we do on some level have a lot of the tools, right, to, like, really heavily research something and, like, really dig into things because the internet makes that possible.
So, the ultimate question, and now I'm sort of leaning into the the armchair sleuthing forensic aspect of this, do you think they're still together?
I mean, I think so. I don't know. I didn't really look at their her TikTok again to see if there's any more content.
He says my girlfriend. He says, so I'm implying, you know, it's present tense. He doesn't say my ex-girlfriend. But if he had said my ex-girlfriend, I feel like that would have been the story, you know, like not this guy.
I feel like it would have been a much different tone. Because I think if they had broken up, it probably would have been, you know, related to everything that happened. Because that's a lot of pressure on a couple. Like, you all of a sudden have, you know, a lot of people speculating. I do a lot of interviews with pop stars who have dealt with a lot of the similar thing where they, like, have people speculating their relationship so much that it ends up ruining the relationship that they have. Like, that can kind of be a downfall of it. And so I feel like, especially if you're a private citizen who doesn't have to deal with that on a grander level, like, I would assume that if they had broken up, that would be the reason. And that the piece would have been a very different piece.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. Like, that kind of stress would break any couple. And this is aspirational, honestly. Like, they,
yeah.
I am blown away by how mature these 20-year-olds have been, you know, under all the scrutiny that they've been able to stay together, like, throughout all this.
Yeah.
So cheers to them.
And a couple that did not stay together,
aww,
and my heart is broken, is one of my favorite couples, the Silly Band CEO, Robert Croke, and his much younger influencer girlfriend, Sophia. They are no longer together.
I am shocked I did not know about these people. This is absolutely, like, on brand for me to care deeply about these people.
I'm
when you told
me, you didn't know about this. So this broke around 2019. And around that time, they had already been together for close to a year. So they started dating like maybe late 2018. And so it's Sophia Sapillo and Robert Croke. And to kind of catch you up on how they started dating, basically he slid into her DMs thinking that she was his friend's niece, which is already like weird. I don't understand the context of it. It's already kind of gross.
Are you Don's niece?
So,
hey,
it's so strange.
Comma, are you Don's niece? It's so gross.
It's so weird. And so I basically started talking, and eventually, like, there's like a New York Post article where he was like, he was really attracted to her ambition, and they eventually started boning. And by the time that the New York Post started covering them and all the, you know, Daily Mail and kind of the typical sort of like, you know, here is like a strange age gap couple, you know, outlets, that they were about to, they wanted to get married. They like were ready to like, you know, move to the next step of their relationship. And it was a huge jackpot for Sophia, who at the time was an Instagram influencer and also 25 years younger than Robert. I think she was 27 when the news broke of them dating, and he was like 50, I guess like 52, 53. And he's also a multimillionaire who founded the company that created Silly Bands, which, did you have a lot of Silly Bands?
No, I feel like I just missed that trend.
Okay, so Silly Bands were essentially these, like really just, I don't know, they were kind of cheap, like these, like, really kind of, like, cheapishly made, like, neon-colored rubber band-type bracelets.
But were they in different shapes?
They were in different shapes,
yeah,
and then
okay,
you put them on your hand, and you would wear, like, a million of them at once. This was, like, peak bracelet trend of the 2000s, where, like, you just wore, like, a million multicolored bracelets.
Was it around the sex bracelets, like, panic time?
It was around that time, yeah, and I don't remember if Silly Bands had, like, a sex bracelet angle to them at all, but they were very popular, so people just, you would buy, like, I think they came in like multi-packs where you would just like buy them kind of like trading cards where there was like a bunch of Silly Bands in a pack, and then you would just wear them all.
And that's how this guy made his money, like all of his money off of this trend?
I think he owns like a larger company that like created them. So I'm sure he has money from other dumb business ventures in the way that multimillionaires do. But he's still very rich. So it's not like Silly Bands are no longer popular. This man is still a multimillionaire.
Wow, she hit the jackpot.
Yeah. So they garnered a fun amount of media attention, and they were well covered about the relationship. She was very against him being her sugar daddy. Like, they were very much in love. They talked about it all the time. They cared about each other. And a part that made it even bigger was the fact that she made a lot of TikToks, and all of her TikToks were together and extremely horny. A lot of TikToks about how, like, he's, like, dominant, stuff like that. Like, just, like, about, you know, how much they, like, love each other, just, like, really, I mean, just some really gross stuff. And, you know, good for them, but, like, also
keep it away, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He thought you were his friend's niece before. But in a surprise twist, Sophia made a rather big announcement in the TikTok that announced that they were breaking up, which is that she's gay, which, good for her.
Never take it for granted. I'm gay. I can't change it. I can't change it anymore.
Good for her.
And she followed it up with a bunch of videos, a lot of them like very kind of like weepy and, you know, emotional, that she kind of continues to refute the idea that her relationship with Robert was fake. And they were together for a few years. Like, this was, you know, she's now in her early 30s. Like, they were together for a few years. They lasted through the pandemic. They still made a lot of content together. And she also kind of refuted people accusing her of kind of faking it with Robert and knowing that she was gay the whole time, which, you know, makes sense. I feel like that's like a thing that happens with people, is like they kind of don't fully realize how they identify, and then it takes some time for them to mature into the identity and kind of realize who they are. But they had a nice few years. She, you know, has had a nice time with Robert, and now they're no longer, and she is a lesbian. So congrats to her.
My whole sentiment with all of this is good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her. And that sort of applies to, you know, the other sugar baby that trend that is going around on TikTok is, do you remember that Jean Lajoie song, Show Me Your Genitals? It's super old.
Women are stupid and I don't respect them. That's right. I just have sex with them. Show me your genitals.
The audio has been edited to, the song starts with women are stupid and I don't respect them. And now it's men are stupid and I don't respect them. And it's largely sugar babies using this audio to show off how much they make doing no work. And one of them is this lady saying, just got done earning 6 months rent in one video chat where I just agreed with everything he said and laughed a lot. Another says, me booking a vacation paid for entirely by men online who I've never met and never will. And it's super interesting to me, as someone who's covered sex work for a while, because on TikTok, there is a lot of backlash against sex workers. I don't know if you've seen this a ton on your For You page or in the comments, but a lot of people on TikTok say that women on the app are glamorizing sugar dating for teenage girls. And they get really mad at sex workers just for being on there, because there's this idea that TikTok is, you know, quote unquote, just for children, even though obviously it's so mainstream that, you know, it's for everyone now. It's obviously not just for children. Yeah. And I've talked to a lot of sex workers on the app who say that they get a lot of hate on there, and they get accused of like grooming kids for the industry for that reason, which is obviously bullshit. I mean, just because you're going on an app, like you're going on social media showing off how you make money, doesn't mean that you're trying to indoctrinate younger women into joining the industry.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not surprised by any of that at all. Like, we've seen the way that sex workers are treated on every single social media platform. So it does not surprise me that it's just as bad, if not maybe worse, on TikTok because of that. But I feel like when I've gotten a lot of content from sex workers on my For You page, it's been sort of like resource sharing between everyone. And that's kind of always nice to see. And I feel like, again, it's like one of those things where, you know, it's like educational in a way that I feel like a lot of people wish they had had before they had entered sex work and sort of had that. I don't know. But again, like, it can be inferred a different way by people who are more conservative and like don't want to look at the reality that for a lot of people, this is the primary way that they can and are able to make money. But, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely the intention behind a lot of this content, I think, is educational, or even, you know, just like light this trend in particular, like lightly poking fun at your clients, like in a pretty honestly innocuous way.
Yeah.
And but people interpret it as glamorizing sugar dating. And I mean, I have mixed feelings about this because, you know, I know a lot of people who've done sugar dating, and it's not really... It's, you know, in reality, it's a lot more taxing, I think, than, you know, both emotionally. There's a lot of emotional labor involved. And, you know, I think it's more taxing than these women are portraying it. So, yeah, I mean, to an extent, it is glamorizing it. But I think it's less about glamorizing sex work to me and more about glamorizing the idea of doing little to no work for pay, which I think is more about like denouncing hustle culture in general. Like, with everybody obsessed with putting in,
people
like,
are tired.
Yeah, people are tired. They don't want to fucking work. But I mean, I really appreciate it, you know, in the context of sort of taking a stand against hustle culture and this valorization of like, oh, you have to put in 25-hour days in order to like get anywhere. Like, I love the idea that I don't want to get into like, you know, so like anti-capitalist theory or anything, but like, I mean, I certainly have the sugar baby fantasy all the time. every that day. Season. Yeah, even though every I'm far day. Too old.
Why do you think I'm on Raya? I said that age to 50 up. That age is at 50 up.
Your age is at 50 up? I thought you said well, John Mayer. I mean, it's like a, on it.
I mean, it's lower than that. But I mean, like, I made sure that it also went up beyond 50.
Girl, I think you should raise it higher. Can you cap it? Can you cap it at like 90?
You can only go to 55 plus. Like, but then it just, yeah, it's, you know, everyone above 55.
Are you getting like, are there a lot of 55 plus dudes on there?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they, like venture capitalists? Like, are they actually? Yeah. Oh, my God. You're so lucky.
So I'll see you next year.
I don't know.
Where do rich people go?
I don't know where rich people vacation. That on, like, our employer's podcast. Like, you're effectively putting in your notice.
I mean, I have yet to go on a date with a 55-plus rich man from Raya. So we'll see.
I'm holding. I'm crossing my fingers for you.
When I do, it's a wrap.
It's sayonara. Yeah, I've asked
my husband.
No one
will hear from me. I'm deleting my entire internet presence. I'm gonna have a nice life.
I mean, that's a dream, right? That's a dream.
Once my student loans are paid off, it's a wrap for me. See you guys never. I'll text you from where do rich people vacation?
Oh. I've begged my husband to let me get a sugar baby, the sugar daddy, many times. Because I'll get men. I mean, I'm sure you've gotten these messages too, just by virtue of being like a woman on the internet,
yeah.
Who slide into your DMs and they're like, "Hey, sweetie, like I'll give you money for doing nothing. Just ignore me." And I'm sure
they're all fake though. They're all fake. My friend responds to all of them.
I know, but I hold out hope.
I have a friend who like responds to all of them, like every time she gets one, and she will keep talking to them, but then it's always a scam. Just hoping that one day that
how does she know it's a scam?
Real.
Like, what's the scam? Well, no. Like, she's not paying any money.
Well, basically, like they start asking her for a lot of info. Like, they're like basically trying to like get her information. Like, they're trying to like pull her. Like, they're trying to scam her.
Oh my God, that's so
or, like,
evil.
They like want to like FaceTime too much, and she's like, "No, like here's my Cash App. Just send the money. If you want to FaceTime me, that costs money." Like, just like stuff like that, and like they never do. And so all the Instagram and Twitter ones, most of them are kind of fake. And she'll like, there's like those Twitter accounts where it's like sugar daddies who are like, you know, just like reply with your Cash App and I'll send you $50. Mm-hmm. Also, they never send the money.
That's the cruelest thing I've ever heard is exploiting tired women's desire not to work.
We're so tired.
We're so fucking tired. Speaking of sugar babies, although I guess that's not technically, it's just like young women.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a good theme. A lot of little age gap theme. So, obviously, I talk about Taylor Swift all the time on this podcast, but I get a lot of Taylor Swift content, and a lot of it has been Jake Gyllenhaal being roasted by every single person for dating Taylor Swift and breaking her heart when she was 20 years old and he was 30. But that has also made way for a lot of people to drag other former beloved child actors turned prestige actors, and one of them has been Leonardo DiCaprio. And he is the subject of a song that I'm obsessed with by 25-year-old singer Natalie Burdick. And she basically made a song about how she's in her final Leo year.
I'm in my final Leo year. Next summer's 26. DiCaprio, please notice me so we can have 214 days of bliss.
I love this song.
The song is so good, and it's one of those things where it's been pretty well documented. Like, there are full-on graphs online, articles written, everything, about how Leo and his girlfriends tend to part ways by the time that they turn 26. So he starts to date girls around the time that they turn 20, and then by the time they're 26, the relationship is typically over, unless it's Rihanna, who I think he dated when she was over 26, but she's Rihanna. That's an exception to everyone. So in the midst of this iconic dragging of the 47-year-old actor, she also kind of shoots her shot. Like, she's, you know, she's trying to date Leo in her final Leo year, which I think is a very respectable thing to do. But unfortunately for Natalie, he's been dating a 24-year-old actress named Camila Marone for the last 4 years. And so that will probably end by the time that Natalie is already 26, because Camila will not be turning 26 until much later.
What were you doing in your final Leo year? How did you spend your last Leo year?
I think I was dating a comedian, which is dark. I should have been dating Leonardo DiCaprio.
Exactly. That's what this song fills me with so much nostalgia for my final Leo. I was in a relationship with my now husband. And do I want to say I regret that and the beautiful life and family that we've built together? No. But do I regret not having spent my final Leo year dating Leo? Yeah, a little bit.
I definitely regret dating a comedian in my final Leo year. Like, what was that? That's such a, that's a lame thing. Leo's a very specific sort of, like, he dates this 5-6 year range, which is weird. It's weird how often it's happened. I'm glad we're dragging it as a culture. I think, like, the thing I've noticed with Gen Z is that they, I feel like millennials still romanticize, like, the Lolita-ness of culture, whereas I feel like Gen Z hates it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this, too. We talked about this last week.
Like, the grooming conversation and sort of also, you know, the misconstruing of grooming as well. But, like, I think that there's an anti-Lolita-ness to Gen Z. And so they drag these people. And I feel like we've seen that happen again with Jake Gyllenhaal specifically because of All Too Well, because of All Too Well and everything else. Like, I think people just really love to not support that, which I think is very healthy and amazing.
It is healthy and amazing. And I'm glad that people are fucking like waking up to the fact that there is something creepy about a guy who just continuously, you know, in his 40s and 50s, seeks out extremely young women.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, it does raise the question, like, why do we celebrate? And I'm not saying that this is wrong, but like, why do we celebrate sugar babies for doing the same thing?
Right.
You know? And I think for me, it's more about the openness of, it's a couple of things. It's about the openness of the transactional nature of it. And it's also about the fact that the women are really, you know, taking ownership of their sexuality and taking advantage of the men. Like, we don't celebrate
there's
the men.
There's a huge difference because I feel like when, when we talk about like Jake and Taylor, for example, there is like a power dynamic that's happening.
Yeah.
They're in the same industry. They're both in entertainment. He's, you know, at that time much more established. She's older. There's like a little bit of a power thing where she's like still like 20 and going through it. Same, especially Leo, obviously a much stronger power dynamic where he's like dating much younger actresses and models who are just at the start of their career and like much lesser known than someone like Taylor and in the Jake situation. But like, or the different power dynamic where with sugar babies, like it is a job. Like they are literally doing it for profit. And that they are only there for, like you said, the transactional purpose of it. It's not like, like I don't know, Camila Morone, is she making money off of Leo?
Probably indirectly.
Yeah, right. Like, she's not, you know, like, what happens to her after they break up? There's a much more emotional level of the relationship, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think, it's not like she's, I mean, maybe she will just, like, if she, I don't know what her future will look like if she, if they do break up. But, like, I think with sugar babies, the idea is that when it ends and you ideally move on.
Yeah, I think there's often, you know, as we were talking about, a lot of blurrier lines there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I do think that Gen Z has a much more sophisticated and better understanding of power dynamics and relationships than, you know, our generation did. And and that's what I really appreciate about TikTok in particular, that we're calling out predatory men, you know, while also celebrating the fact that young women are sort of taking ownership of their own sexuality and, you know, pursuing, you know, these relationships like autonomously.
Yeah.
I think that's an advancement in our culture that I appreciate.
Right.
No, I don't think you understand. I'm obsessed.
So I'm obsessed with this guy named Simon Hennessines, who has this ongoing series about a French exchange student with terrible English named Remy. Have you seen any of these videos?
I have not.
Oh my God, they're amazing.
I am quick introduce. Thanks. What's up? I name Remy. I am France. You have shock. You have not shock with my pronouns.
It's this Irish guy with a mullet. He clearly is a French speaker. You can tell that he speaks it kind of well, or at least like he's been around a lot of French speakers because of how well he gets the accents and like the English errors that he's, the grammatical errors that he makes. And
yeah.
He comes out with these sketches and there's this whole narrative that super fans like myself have constructed in the comments that he's kind of feeding into as he keeps making these videos, which At first, he started negging this girl in his class, this dumb girl named Linda.
Okay, Linda, you are dog. And in French, we have saying qui court de lièvre à la fois non prend d'aucun. And as English, it means shut up, Linda.
But as he's made more videos, it's progressed that he's secretly in love with Linda, but Linda is dating this other classmate named Jason, and he's kind of semi-developed a drinking problem as a result of it.
We have to play game, never ever have a lover. I have to never ever have a lover in the class, it seems. I am for cigarettes once more, excuse. Plus, I am to...
It's so, so good. I cannot describe how happy it makes me. Every morning I wake up when one of these videos comes out and I'm like, to my husband, new Remy dropped. And he's like, he doesn't think it's funny. I don't understand how he doesn't think it's funny. But it's hilarious. And because you had a condescending French exchange student in your college classes, right?
No.
Oh, I did. It was kind of complex. I also had she was really sweet. And I also had a big crush on her. But like she was a little condescending. And like it was exactly like this. And I just love how TikTok has become a platform where we can bully the British and the French and the Italian, you know, where we can bully other white people from other countries, basically. I'm really enjoying them.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate to say? Am I going to get canceled for that? Like being pro-bullying?
No,
Italians?
Because we're about to bully some Australian and British boys.
Yes,
I don't know if we're
going to
bully them. But like, I think it's funny.
Yeah.
So... Are you familiar with both One Direction and 5 Seconds of Summer or just One Direction?
One Direction more so, but yes.
Okay, so just to kind of preface for everyone, One Direction, I mean, I think everyone knows One Direction, British boy band, birthed us Harry Styles, Zayn Malik, and, you know, Niall, I don't know, like everyone has their favorites from there, but like we all, One Direction were the biggest boy band in the world for several years. And 5 Seconds of Summer is this Australian pop punk band turned kind of like more pop rocky, just like general alt rock band that opened for One Direction during sort of the peak of One Direction's reign over pop music. And then went on to become pretty big themselves. And they're still together. One Direction is no more. So if you lived through Stan Twitter circa 2012 to 2015 for both 5 Seconds of Summer and One Direction, because there's a lot of crossover between those two fandoms, you definitely deserve a veterans discount because that shit was crazy. So, I mean, that era was also the basis for a lot of the ways Stan internet functions today. You know, One Direction specifically kind of becoming as big as they were built on how popular they were online. Like they did not audition as a band for X Factor. They did not win X Factor, but like they became bigger and they got signed because of how big their fandom was on Twitter, because they're cute boys. And 5Sauce also grew so much because of how big their fandom was. So even though that One Direction is no longer a band, they broke up a few years ago and I'm still recovering from it. And 5Sauce has waned in their mega popularity. You know, they're still like doing pretty well. They still chart. I still like their music, but you know, it's like not, they're like older, they're more mature now. And they also just like are not the biggest band in the world. Their stans are still very active and they're still commiserating on TikTok, where they kind of talk about their experiences at shows, talk about their experiences with each other. And most importantly for this segment today, they talk about their experiences with the band. So depending on how old you were when these bands were at their peak, it can be easy to forget that these were 9 very horny teenage boys, very young, very, very famous, very cute. But at the end of the day, these were 2 groups full of very young, hot, and very famous men who spent most of their year on the road. They would stay in hotels full of also very young, hot girls who would just wait around the hotel for them. So there's been a lot of TikToks recently that I have been obsessed with. And because I missed this portion of Stan Twitter, because this was me beginning to write more on just the bands generally, I missed this sort of like niche element of the standums, but there are a lot of the girls who are sharing their kind of quote unquote groupie tales of sleeping with One Direction and 5 Seconds of Summer back in the day. And so there was one 5Sauce fan, 5 Seconds of Summer goes by 5Sauce a lot of the time, named Chelsea, who posted a selfie video set to Mona Leo's Beating Down Your Block with the overlay text reading, Think You Can Hurt Me, I Lost My V to my fave band member, and she used the hashtag #5sauce to make it, in case you didn't know who it was. And some of the comments say that the band was absolutely feral back in the day and that they were basically being passed around by their fans. And others, like, don't believe that that was her experience. But then she kind of goes into detail about how there was, like, a... She gives, like, a lot of detail about this, like, hotel apartment complex that 5sauce would stay in. A lot of other celebrities stayed there, and there'd be girls waiting around every single day. And they started to befriend them and then eventually would, like, sleep with a lot of them.
Yeah, why would you not believe this?
Right. Like,
this is extremely, like, believable.
I think, you know, again, depending on how old you were, like, if you were a younger fan, like, if... when I was like 8 when I loved NSYNC, and you could not have told me that NSYNC had groupies when I was 8 years old, which is probably the same age a lot of 5sauce and One Direction fans were. But, like, if you're older, you know, like, you know that that's happening. So I feel like if you were pretty young when this happened, I think it's kind of hard to grasp, because those stories are out there. 5sauce has talked about this before in their Rolling Stone cover story. And it was very, very controversial because the story was them at a point when they were kind of trying to break sort of like the teen dream element of them, and we're kind of talking a lot more about just like their escapades at the time. And the story blew up and the fans hated it. They hated the story. They hated that the band talked so flippantly about sex and about having sex with fans and having, you know, like, just like a lot of girls around their hotel room. They hated how... I mean, it's...
If it's legal and it's consensual, why do they care?
I mean, it's ownership, right? I mean, it's the same reason why, like, people, like, you know, I feel like a lot of just teen fans of artists get really sort of, they feel a lot of ownership over the band. And so I think it's different for 5sauce in One Direction, right? Like, with 5sauce, there was a little bit of this element of, like, they accused them of, like, being just, I don't know, like, just too flippant with it. And I think they thought that they were sexist for, like, doing it. I don't know. I think there was a control thing on both levels that they were, like, concerned about, but I feel like the stories that have come out seem very consensual and seem very, you know,
yeah, like,
non-problematic.
Obviously there's a skewed power dynamic at play, yeah, but at the same time, they're both getting what they want, and it's and if they're of age and it's consensual, yeah, then, like, what's the big deal? Like, why are people offended by the fact that men, like, these very young men who have the opportunity to have a lot of sex with a lot of women are taking advantage of that opportunity?
Yeah. And, you know, it's fandom sort of, I think it's sometimes hard for teen fans to understand that their favorite artists do have sex with people.
People
that may not, you know, we're seeing this a lot with, like, I mean, we're not getting into it today, but, like, Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde or, like, other, and so that's a whole other conversation. But, like, you know, it's like you see this with, like, different couple, you know. The One Direction thing is very specific. I think there's a lot of people who have their own theories about One Direction, about Harry, but, you know, I feel like teen fans find it really hard. Again, like, in my experience of being a stan, like, I did not like Britney Spears for a couple of years because she was dating Justin Timberlake. Again, I was 8, but, like, it broke my heart. Like, I couldn't fathom it. Like, it honestly hurt me that he was with a Britney who was not me. So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk today with Larisha Paul, who is a writer. She has a column for The Fader. She writes for Rolling Stone a lot. She also was a teen at the time that One Direction and 5sauce Twitter was just red hot and blazing. And so she can speak to a lot of these experiences of fans talking about this and also the perspective that's coming in today from a lot of fans commiserating over their shared experiences of waiting in the wings for these boys. So obviously we invited you on because you cover pop music and you cover fandom, but I know that you also have a history of being a part of the One Direction and 5 Seconds of Summer fandoms. So I was wondering if you can briefly give us a history of your experience being a fangirl with these two groups and also engaging with the social media side of fandom.
Yeah, my war stories. yeah, so I made a One Direction fan account when I was 13, back in 2012. And I, like, kind of just spent all of my time doing that. I would get home from school, would be, like, the first thing I did when I got home. I made, like, all of my best friends on, like, pop Twitter, One Direction Twitter. And yeah, so we would just kind of get on there, and it was like, it started as like, you know, we're posting about what the boys are up to and what, you know, late night show they're going to be on or the album releases or whatever. But then it would be like all of these like down periods in between like tours or albums, and you just were kind of left to your own devices, because after the first few months of One Direction getting famous, they stopped talking to us, really, which I don't blame them. It was a very, I wouldn't want to talk to us either, especially with like the whole shipping thing between the boys. It was just very uncomfortable. And it was kind of too much for them to control, I guess. And so we were just kind of left to our own devices, and that kind of turned into these like just kind of funnier moments and conversations, and people leaking things and hacking into things. And then like the boys would come online and we'd pretend like we didn't see it and like kind of quickly shift the conversation, which was really fun. And then kind of towards the end of that year was when Five Saws got kind of introduced to our fandom, because Louis had posted about one of their songs, I think was Gotta Get Out. And then later was announced that they were taking them on tour. And so that was just kind of like a hyper investment in that band also. And it was funny because it was like so early in their careers still that it felt like you were kind of jumping in at an earlier point than you like had the chance to with One Direction. Cause I think by the time I found out about One Direction, I had about maybe a week and a half of them still being relatively unknown before they were like this global phenomenon. And so with Five Saws, it was fun for them to still be like a little bit of a secret in a way, which is like obviously what you want as a 14-year-old girl when you're, you know, really finding your own music taste and wanting to be able to go to school and be like, you don't know this band. They're like super underground and Australian. Like you don't know about them. And so that was a lot of fun. And especially with Five Saws being so early, you know, we were just kind of on there on our own and like seeing all of these stories or following, you know, people who were adjacent to the bands and kind of just getting pieces and nuggets of information like that and seeing kind of like where those threads led. And most of the time it was like not as big of a deal as everyone liked to act like it was. I remember there was like one really funny tweet. I love going through like my Twitter archive and finding like old things I used to tweet when I was like 15. And there was like the summer Five Saws were getting really big. There was this girl who was like Tumblr famous, I think. Her name was Acacia Brinley. And she was hanging out with a lot of the Five Saws boys. I think she first started hanging out with Michael and then she was hanging out with Luke. And Luke was always my favorite. So I was like hyper protective as a young teen. And there was like some rumor that they were either hanging out or they were dating or something. And I tweeted and I was just like, Luke's not an idiot. He knows what he's doing. He knows when he's being used. And I was just like, does he? I don't think that girl did anything to him. But it was really funny to just to like look back and be like, the smallest things we like blew out of proportion. And it seemed like the end of the world whenever anyone was near them. But yeah, it was a time for sure.
Yeah. I mean, because that's what EJ and I are talking about a little bit, is like the idea of the sort of, I think with boy bands, there is this possessiveness that sort of happened these groups at the time. Like, you know, was there sort of this idea that you had this ownership over Five Saws, over 1D, over kind of like how they, you know, especially with Five Saws being a little bit more interactive with their fans, how would you kind of categorize those relationships?
Yeah, I definitely think with One Direction, it turned into more of like a defense thing where we were just like, kind of set out on making sure that they were being perceived in like what we thought was the accurate way. I think, you know, people obviously took a lot of problems to Harry being portrayed as this like womanizer, like from the jump. And it was really strange because in hindsight, that first relationship that was really publicized was his, you know, when the time he spent with Caroline Flack. And it was like, in hindsight, it was like, he was being groomed, but like, let's, you know, let's move on from that. And so with One Direction, it was very much like, you know, let's protect them. But they also didn't have so much of their time together was kind of disconnected from like the public. Obviously, like when they did interviews, it wasn't like they didn't do a lot of interviews. One, and when they did, they weren't like super in depth. No one was like really actually bothering to look at what was happening within One Direction, whether that's like their inner circle, their fandom, anything like that. That's something that I think the fans more so dug into more than anything. And that's how it kind of ended up leaking into like this more mainstream news reporting of being like, oh, like this is happening with One Direction fans and this is what One Direction fans are like frenzied about this week. And it was never like anyone actually looking into that kind of realm of them. But yeah, but definitely with Five Sauce, it was a lot more, it was a lot more possessive because we did have that like access to them and we saw so much more of them. They were a lot more social media savvy. They posted a lot more. And they were also just everywhere. And it was so like early for them. One Direction couldn't go anywhere. If they wanted right. to, it was not possible. Them trying to be sneaky about things at a certain point just became unrealistic. And so with Five Sauce, they were still so early in their fame and like kind of really soaking in that, that everything was everywhere. And they were dealing with so many like influencers before influencers were called influencers. And like kind of running in those YouTuber circles and these Tumblr famous circles and just like these relatively well-known on the internet people that it was kind of inevitable for all of that to get back to their fans. But yeah, it was very much, from my perspective at least, being a One Direction fan and a Five Sauce fan, I think the actual hardcore 100% in with Five Sauce fans took it a lot more seriously. And I say that because yeah. I still see that now. Because I have like a whole group chat of like some of my best friends and we became really close because of Five Sauce and some of them are still in that fandom. And so then I like kind of get the glimpse it from seeing what they're tweeting about and like what's kind of going on in their timelines. And they're still really, really intense. And I think even like living in New York, it's so funny because you get to like kind of see these, like the way that stan culture kind of manifests in real life. And you know, it's like the girls showing up to the hotel still and like kind of waiting out there for hours and just knowing, you know, when the flights are getting in and what hotels they're staying at. And you know, it's like, oh well, they stay at these three different hotels normally, but like sometimes they stay at these other ones. And I know there's this one they stay at in the city that's has like a coffee shop right next door to it, and they've like seen Ashton go in there a few times and order coffee. So like when they go to wait at the hotel, they'll go in there and buy them coffee and then wait outside the hotel to give them the coffee. Yeah. And it's just like, well, that just seems weird. But like no part of their brain is like telling them this is kind of an odd thing to do. But yeah, it's really funny just to kind of see how even like literally like a decade into both of these bands' careers, like there are still girls who are very much protective, very territorial in a way over these bands that are like so massively famous. But I think Five Sauce is still famous in a way where people don't, they're not going to get mobbed walking down the street. You know, I think they're all kind of past that point, but Five Sauce never really had a moment where they were like being mobbed anywhere.
Yeah.
So we were specifically talking about these videos where, you know, the fans talk about having waited to hook up with the band members, but also some of them successfully did. And like when these stories were first shared within these fandoms, like what were the reactions back in the day?
I remember it being like half outrage and half like really funny, depending on what side of stan Twitter you were on. And I always opted for funny stan Twitter. Stressed out stan Twitter was never for me. It just seemed like logging on to Twitter was a job for them. And I was just on there to crack jokes. And it was just the funniest thing. And I remember there being this one audio. It had to have been from either early 2012 or late 2012, early 2013. And it was supposedly Zayn. It was like this leaked phone call of him talking to these girls, telling them like how to come into the hotel. And it was just like, he was like, oh, there's fans outside. Like, you don't want to look like a fan. So like, don't engage with them. Just come straight inside and tell the people your name is Christabel Riley. And that was like their, I think, designer, like their stylist's name or something like that. And it was like, just get on the elevator, tell them your name is Christabel Riley. And also Harry is saying like, you guys need to hurry up. Like you need to be quicker. And then apparently one of the girls was just like, if Harry wants booty, he's going to have to wait for it. And it's just like hearing that as like a real thing that someone would say, it's just hilarious. Like, I don't know. And I feel like maybe part of it was an age thing. I was 14 at the end of 2012. There was no way in anybody's hell that I was going to end up at a hotel with Harry Styles. It was not happening. And so I think the fans who got a little bit more like outraged about it maybe might have been on like the older spectrum, because they, you know, kind of this like that should have been me kind of moment. And I think being younger and being like, well, that was not going to be me at any point in time unless someone wants to go to jail. So like, that's not, you know, that's, there's nothing to be like jealous about necessarily. And most of the time I feel like most One Direction fans just kind of spun that into like fanfic tropes to write about on Tumblr or Wattpad, and then that kind of turned into its whole like own thing. But yeah, I remember it being really funny up until like with Five Sauce. It was more, I don't even know the right word. Like, I remember when Five Sauce, they had their Rolling Stone cover come out in 2015, and that cover ruined my life for like quite a few months. Just because I was 17 at that point. I've been listening to this band for, you know, 2 years now, almost 3 years. I'm like, those are my boys. Like, obviously, like, I feel protective of them. I love their music. I love them. And it kind of was this whole thing of being excited for them. And then once you actually started reading the interview, it's like, what's happening here? Why are we doing this? Why are we saying these things? And there was this one part, particularly with Luke, and I was a Luke girl. And so this was traumatizing for me. And he was just like, you know, when you put four guys in a band and, you know, they have just predominantly female fan base, like, of course, they're going to be having a lot of sex. And I was like, you're doing what? Like, what do you mean? And then, you know, the writer kind of was like sex with like multiple girls in one night. And Luke goes, I mean, I don't want to say, but like, it's a possibility. And then they were like multiple girls at one time. And Luke goes, the possibilities are endless. And I remember I had this Five Sauce bracelet I wore every single day since I saw them in concert, like 4 or 5 months before that. And I like read that interview and I like ripped the bracelet off my arm. I threw it in a drawer, slammed the drawer closed, like very 17-year-old melodrama. There was no need to do all of that. And in hindsight, I'm just like, okay. Like, it was not... was not that crazy, and they were also teenagers. Like, it wasn't as bad as I was acting like it was. I think Luke was probably like 19 at the time, and so it was it was definitely, it's funny to like look back on, but like in the moment it was like you didn't want to picture them being those types of artists or people who kind of take advantage of the fact that their fan base is predominantly female girls. Because in that same interview, there's a quote where Ashton is just like, we don't just want our fans to be girls. And so it was like this whole thing of like, well, you don't want your fans to be all girls, but you're going to capitalize on the fact that they are, because it gives you access. And it was just this whole thing. And, you know, especially with like all of these videos coming out of people being like, yeah, I slept with a boy band member. I slept with this band member. And like everyone just automatically knowing that it could like very plausibly have something to do with Five Sauce is just like so funny. Cause like even like the comments on a lot of those TikToks are just like, they're like, this band is like really ran through. And it's just like, it's just like, that's the legend of it all. But like, it's funny now, I think.
Especially since One Direction is no longer a band, you know, they're all doing their own thing. They're all solo. And Five Seconds of Summer, you know, they've like also done some solo stuff, and, you know, they kind of waned in popularity from that sort of peak moment for them. And why do you think it's now that especially the fans are sort of like coming back and like, remembering these moments and also sharing these moments and also of the response to it? It seems like there's a mix of people who still don't believe that these women's stories, and also, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, I remember that hotel, or I remember that, like, you know.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably just because everyone's older. Like, everyone's kind of past the, or like most of the fandom, I would say, is probably past the point that Five Sauce were when most of this was going on. And so, you know, us, like, I'm 23 now, and so I'm just like, you know, I'm the same age that everyone in One Direction was when the band broke up. And so it's just like, okay, now I can kind of, with a more adult perspective, kind of look back and be like, okay, well, that's probably like the mindset that they were in at that time. But yeah, I think it's just that everyone's kind of grown up, and especially with Five Sauce, like, Luke and Michael are engaged fully to actual human beings. And, you know, Callum has a girlfriend, and Ashton has a girlfriend. And so it's like, there's kind of no harm in it anymore. And I think, you know, the thing that got people more riled up most of the time wasn't necessarily like the rumors of them sleeping with people. It was the rumors of them dating people. Like, that was the worst thing. Like, I don't want to, you know, you can sleep with whoever you want. I just don't want to hear that you have a girlfriend, like that. Cause then that, you know, sounds like, well, now I don't have access. So I feel like just because of the fact that everything's kind of more, they're all just kind of domesticated now. They're not, you know, for the streets anymore. Like, it's just fun to be able to like look back. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are still going to be skeptical. And I think that's just because it's so easy to make up, and it's so easy to get people to believe you, especially with Five Sauce, if people know like what they were like in like the early 2010s or whatever, like it's not that far-fetched to just be able to say like this happened, and like, you know, it's not like you're gonna be sitting here posting the proof of it all these years later or anything like that, and you know, going through the lengths to do that. And so, you know, I've seen some comments of people being like, you know, respect their privacy, why would you say this? And it's just like, well, they were there too. It's not like, you know, this was something that happened to them. This is something that they participated in. And so it's just as much their story to tell as it is any of the other guys. And they're not going to be the ones to tell it. So, you know, might as well get what you can get from whoever. Yeah. And I just think TikTok is such like a funny place to do that. Because you hear so many stories, and it's, I love the ones where it's not being hyper-specific about anything, and everyone still just kind of gets it, because it's going to find its way to the people who know. And it's like the girls who get it, and the girls who don't, don't. Like, it's very, if you were there, you know, you get it. And I think it's just, I think it's so funny. I think it's so funny, and I think it's also kind of one of those things where no one's being harmed by them telling these stories. It's not like, you know, there were a lot of situations last year with a couple of different artists and actors and just things where, you know, people were making like burner accounts and anonymous accounts to, you know, report that they were a fan of someone and then they got sexually assaulted, or like it was something so much more grave and serious. So I feel like in light of that, you know, I'm glad you, you know, got to go to the hotel and do what you did, and that was like your story and your fun, and now you have a best friend out of it. I think that's great, because it could have ended in such a worse way. And so I just feel like, you know, in all of that, like it's just fun to hear people's stories and kind of reminiscing about things like that. And yeah, I mean, it's still going on with like, you know, whatever artists, however many artists. And so, you know, in a few years, whatever platform we're on at that point, we'll start hearing the stories on there, and it'll still be, you know, because what are they going to do, be mad at you? Like, okay, like, all right. So some people are mad.
So now it's time for, I mean, we talked about a lot of himbos today, but, and I have no more favorite himbos than Five Sauce of One Direction, but I do have this himbo who I am, I guess, in love with now that I've seen this video. So TikTok is a really great space for porn that is not quite porn, but definitely makes you go, how is this allowed? So today I'd like to celebrate a supremely erotic video featuring a guy whose name I think is Ed, because the caption just says Ed part two, and it's one of two videos of Ed doing this, that's showing off his tongue skills with a can of Ready Whip. And so his friend Robert, who is the TikTok user, has now posted these videos of Ed basically just like putting the nozzle of whipped cream to his mouth and then very, very quickly lapping up the contents. It is a skill that every himbo should have. And for that, we celebrate this guy, I think, whose name is Ed.
I can't stress enough like how long he's doing this for too, like without taking a breath. Like, can we time it?
Yeah.
Like, let's start the video. Like, he has so much stamina. Okay.
Okay, I'm timing.
So that was 11 seconds. From
how long
count.
Did you get?
I got 11 seconds. How long did you get?
Yeah. 11.
11 seconds. That's a long time doing that without taking a breath.
Yeah. And good for him.
Good for him.
We celebrate you, Ed.
We celebrate his partner mostly, like whoever he's dating.
I know.
that's who, you know, really reaps the benefits.
And we celebrate Robert for filming it twice now.
It's just good vibes all around today.
Yeah. I just want to know how the conversation came up that that Ed like either wanted this filmed or Robert was like, we need to capture this and put it on TikTok. Like, I feel like I want like a behind the music of like this video.
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Like, and then
and then there's like a fight. Like, yeah. Like there's a drug fueled fight, like there is with every behind the music, like the climax, and then they get together and like they've both gained a little weight and they're like a little grizzled and they give each other a big hug in the studio.
That's beautiful.
And everybody cries. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network, written and hosted by me, EJ Dixon, and Brittany Spanos. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Shelsey, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Dan Stein, and original music composed by Daniel Mertzleft. See you next week.